It's Saturday night. While everyone's partying till dawn, two guys are home, alone, and they don't know nothing about anything. It's time once again for No Agenda, where I get to ask if we've reached the bottom yet. From the Curry Condo, in the flight path of the Blue Angels and Gitmo Nation West, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm John C. Dvorak, at the bottom in northern Silicon Valley. Just sitting here at the bottom.
At the bottom.
By the way, it's comfy down here.
Oh, man. How you doing? Saturday night. It's 9:15. We are losers, dude.
I just flew in from Seattle. So I'm flying in from Virgin American. And so I figured I was going to get in a little earlier. But it was an hour delay because somebody in the back of the plane was... Then this is the truth, by the way. Projectile vomiting on one of the other passengers.
Did they do an announcement? Ladies and gentlemen, we're delayed due to the projectile vomiting.
Who got puked on, and that's how I found out.
God. Well, hopefully you were up front in first class.
No, I wasn't in first, but I couldn't get in. It was packed, but I was in row three. Whatever the case was, the most irksome part is that we took a flight path on the way back that took us west of the Golden Gate Bridge over San Francisco on a very clear day. If it was an hour earlier, I would have had some of the most spectacular photos ever.
Yeah, but you know why? That's because they have a temporary restricted area over all of that for the air show.
Oh, now I'll never get that route again.
Well, if you fly tomorrow, you might.
Oh, yeah, Yeah. Now that you mention that, you're right. I've never been on that route before.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Darn.
I'm sure it had
beautiful.
To do with a temporary restriction.
It was a great view.
I know. I was talking to Patricia, and I said, because the Blue Angels were literally flying past the house here this afternoon, and I'm like holding up the laptop so she can see it, and, you know, beautiful, clear blue sky, and then these planes vibing through. Yeah, it was cool.
You didn't go. You're going to go to the event? You didn't go today.
I didn't go today, first of all, because I felt really kind of... I've had this this thing's been going around the office, this Petri dish of ours. And my head was filled with just gunk, and I had kind of a sore throat, so I slept in a little bit. And actually, I got really inspired and recorded an almost two-hour daily source code.
Yeah. Yeah,
it seems
great.
Well, there's a lot of good music in it, but it seems like the more I see and the more I witness in around me, the more pissed off I get, and I realize it's a great release. I got it like
Let it out.
Tomorrow probably. Yeah, of course. I'm only getting just the tail end of the.
You got to go down and sit down with a big crowd.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I want to. That's over by the Presidio, right?
Right, and you got to get there early. Then we'll talk about it later.
All right, you going to come with me? You want to?
No, I got. No, I'm way behind here.
Oh,
I mean maybe.
Oh, gee.
So
that's not how you want your date to respond.
Yeah,
maybe.
so we're way backed up here for our fans, if we want to call them that, our listeners
with food,
our hangers-on, the eavesdroppers.
Yes. Oh, can I just say, John? By the way, about that, I sat in on a meeting with Moody and Jennifer, and actually Steve, I think, was in there. Dude, we are so kicking ass. You know, between all the cross-pollination we're doing. With Daily Source Code and No Agenda and the Tech 5 Top 5 and the excellent promotion you gave on Twit the other week and Cranky Geeks. Dude, we've got our own little mini Fox network.
Yeah.
We're totally kicking ass. In fact, I turned down advertising. I say, no. You guys weren't there for us when we were small.
They weren't.
We won't do any of your crappy ads.
We got t-shirts to sell.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, by the way, and I want people to know that we're going to have a t-shirt offering. It'll be announced on both the AdamCurry.com or Curry.com and the Dvorak blog.
Really? Oh, this is great. This is news. Have you you talked to Chris Mack?
No. Chris Mack, he doesn't do fulfillment anymore.
Oh,
but I found another guy who offered to do it for us, and he's going to do the whole thing. He'll set up the store and sell the stuff. Okay. All we have to do is design a couple of shirts.
All you do is kind of come up with a good idea.
I got some good ideas. I got one of the top ones I want to do, and I've got it designed already, which is I visited Gitmo Nation, and all I got was this lousy T-shirt and a beating.
And waterboarding. It should be something more like that.
Well, you know, I was thinking of the waterboarding. I'm going to do something else because it doesn't ring as nicely as, you know, I could put waterboarding.
How about I got,
you know what?
I got was tasered.
I could do, we can do like two of them and test whether people want to brag about being waterboarded or beaten.
Or how about tased?
Do they tase people over at Gitmo?
Dude, why don't we just have it? Why don't we just have whatever on the front and on the back? We'll just have "Don't tase me, bro."
Okay, so well, the back costs more.
You ever see, that's not relating to you. Have you never seen that YouTube video of that guy who asked the John Kerry?
Everybody saw that. We blogged.
"Don't tase me, bro."
Okay, so anyway, we're behind on both the merchandising. We're behind on three restaurant reviews, or at least two official ones. And then we're also behind on the last debate, which was so crappy.
Yeah,
we decided
right.
not to do its show right afterwards because it was like, who cares? It's obvious now to both of us that these guys are coached not to screw.
Oh, yeah, I was afraid this might happen. You there?
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Did you lose me?
Yeah, for a second. I apologize. I tried to get this hardwired, and I've got 180 degrees of glass here. I'm receiving every single frickin' Wi-Fi in San Francisco, and they see, now it's already gone in and out again. Crap, I hate this. It happens at the most inopportune moments. Okay, so let me see if I can get John back here. All right, you're back. Go ahead.
Okay, so what was I talking about when you were so rudely interrupted?
Well, we were talking about the restaurants that we.
Oh yeah, we got okay. So we start. Should we start with the you know, this is gonna. We don't want to make this show 10 hours long.
No,
but we have to decide.
It's not like we're gonna get late or anything. Here's one. I'd just like to throw in there. We had lunch yesterday at the steakhouse. What's its name?
Acme. Down there.
Acme Steakhouse, and where you, of course, are the food expert and wine aficionado, I've gotten pretty good at picking out great things on the menu, and I had baby back ribs at Acme Steakhouse, which were unfrickin' believable.
This is the place that's at Candlestick Park.
Yeah. Would you agree?
Yeah, no, they were delicious. They were cooked, were slow cooked for a really long time, or they were
fell right off.
They were probably bought. The way it was reflecting on this dish, they weren't barbecued necessarily because they didn't have a smoke ring or any evidence of that. They would have been red, but they obviously I think were parboiled for a long time and then slow cooked, baked or something like that. They were actually quite good. My wife does a version of that style, and that's pretty much the way it was.
But I never
it was
had
very
it.
Tasty.
Yeah, I never had it that way, and it literally just kind of like almost fell off the bone. It was just
it
like,
does well it, oh. Yeah, it does. Nice. In fact, it tends to shake it and the meat falls off the bone.
All right, but that was not actually a place we went to for review.
No, but you know, we've always actually had a number of meals there, and it's functional. It's a good little restaurant. If you want a piece of meat, you know, they got steaks there that are nice.
And we had an ass kicking Zinfandel.
It was one of the. It was the anniversary Zinfandel from Geyser. It was the Geyserville Zin. I'm sorry. It was the Ridge Geyserville Zin. I think it was the 2005, 2006. One of the two. And the Ridge Zinfandels are always like that. They have that same character. They're very tasty. And I realized at the time when I ordered it that you probably haven't been really acquainted with a lot of these. The style of wine.
Well, actually, Zinfandels, Patricia and I have used to drink quite a lot of, you know, for us, like a bottle a month, maybe. The alcohol content seemed a little bit higher.
Well, you know, the problem right now with Zinfandel, I think the killer problem with Zinfandels is that they're not keeping the alcohols down. And I think a lot of it has to do with the high-tech yeasts that they're using, which jack up the alcohol. And in the olden days, they used to, you know, when they used to make Zin in the backyards and in their small wineries, they used to cool off the must by throwing in blocks of ice.
Hmm.
And actually, when wine is made watered down a little bit in during the process of the winemaking, it incorporates the water quite nicely. In fact, I've done this with some wines, and people out there who have these really, you know, like these really dark wines, and you see that the alcohol is 15.5 or something like that. You can put some water in there, like a third water, and you'll notice that. And sometimes it makes the wine taste better, which is weird. But the absolute weirdest part about it with some of these extremely dark wines, for those of you out there who like to bluff, you can take one of these blockbuster wines that comes out of the bottle almost black, and put about 1/10 of a glass, like the bottom, just a little bit at the bottom of a wine glass, and then fill it up with water. And it looks this, like you've got a glass of red wine because there's so much, you know, the wines are so inky that you can, like, you know, look like you're drinking a lot when you're not. And one of the keys to success in parties, I might say, is to look like you're drinking.
Look but like not you can hold
necessarily drinking. I mean, I go to these some of these events. For one thing, you can't drive around drunk anymore.
Oh, damn, I hate that. When you were a kid, you could drive around drunk all you wanted, man. That was a good time.
I never drove around drunk, but I'm saying that we used to drive around. I used to work a couple of like swing shift or graveyard things, and you had to drive home with these drunks on the road.
Oh,
and they were
me.
All over the place, and you would just, you know, you got used to it.
When you do either a graveyard shift on the radio or the morning show especially, it's like, you know, you're going to work at 4 a.m, man. That's when the idiots are on the road.
Right.
Hey, let me just ask you a question about the Zinfandel. It's almost like a sparkly type quality. Where does that come from?
Sometimes you get a little malolactic taking place in the bottle. It's that one wasn't very extreme. So it's actually a flaw that you can send the wine back if it's too bubbly. You don't want a red wine that has any carbonation, natural carbonation, because of a fermentation that takes place in the bottle. With a white wine, it's pretty hard to call it a flaw because some wines are actually designed to do that.
Right. Nice. Well, it was a good one. I liked it. Now
it was very tasty. And what I liked about it is that it was what they used to call, at least in the trade, a field blend. Because in the olden days, when people made Zinfandel, you know, for the family or whatever, they had their own little vineyard in the backyard. The blend of the grapes was actually in the vineyard. They wouldn't pick, like, you know, batches in and then something else and blend them. They were all just mixed up. You'd have a Zinfandel plant next to a Carignan plant next to a whatever.
So this and was the Acme Steakhouse Zinfandel, as we had for lunch. It was in a nice quality. The name again and the price, John?
It was a Ridge, Geyserville Zin, and the price, I think if you went out and like bought this wine, it would be
$8?
Probably around 14 bucks.
A little bit more.
Like that.
Okay.
It's not an expense. It's not one of their expensive Zins.
It was good, though. Very nice. Very nice for lunch. Now,
yeah, no, it's perfect.
So at the beginning of my my stay here in San Francisco, we went to the Ritz-Carlton.
Right.
And so this is, now we believe the chef made, was it a new chef or did he?
I didn't do any research afterwards, but, you know, I don't know who this chef was, but he had a couple of techniques that were unbelievably great in the way he cooked meat. And he had a pork thing that I ordered, which was just astonishing. You had something that was really good.
No. It was okay, but it wasn't amazing. My problem
was it was all the other stuff that he didn't match flavors at all.
No, he had the wrong combinations. And it's been so long now, I can't remember, but it was like, you know, sometimes, you know, like apple and cheese goes together, like peanut butter and chocolate, you know, that kind of thing. And he was trying to make that, but it was falling flat.
Oh no! I would say it was one of the most disappointing meals I've had in a high end, and I like that place, but it was one of the most disappointing meals I've had in a high end restaurant in 6 months
or a couple of years. You went so you had gotten quarters, of course, because we don't valet; we're cheap asses, and you were putting quarters into the. You were feeding the meter, and I hear someone ask this kind of like the greeter at the main entrance. So I hear someone say, "Hey, what was all the Secret Service here yesterday?" And she says, "Oh, I'm sorry, man. We have to protect the identity of our guests, and I really can't hand out that information." So we're over talking to the guy at the restaurant, waiting for our table, and I say, "Hey, what was all the Secret Service about yesterday?" He says, "Oh, that was Schwarzenegger. He was here. Yeah, he showed up unannounced." Like, what a bogus security.
Yeah, well, yeah, that was funny. Now, but the other thing that was weird about that restaurant...
Moving right along.
The other thing that was weird that was the fact that the wine steward, I cherry picked a wine, which I always do, and people who have been out to dinner with me know I do this constantly. I find some winner on the list that's just a killer.
That is
they don't
not
have
available.
It.
Not available. And by killer, it's the right wine at a great price.
Right. And so usually it just stands out like a sore thumb, like, wow.
Yeah.
So, of course, they're out. So he comes back with a substitute wine thing, and then what was a wine specifically I don't like. And, you know, it's just a wine I don't think much of. And so he comes back with a third wine that he says he'll give us, which is more a little more expensive, but he'll give us at the other price. But he has like a decanter at him. What it was the second wine of Casa d'Estra.
No, wait. He said, oh, you know, you really should decant this. It's really, you shouldn't just, and we're like, we don't really decant.
Because I always tell, you know, I don't think decanting is necessary 90% of the time. I think it's pretentious and, you know, oh, the guy, you know.
John, we never decant. We're just not like that. We're like the French, man. We just drink that shit almost right out of the bottle.
Pretty close.
Okay.
So anyway, but you know, these places, they got to show off. So anyway, so he's going to decant the wine. But this is a Pagodes de Cos, by the way, if anyone wants to know. It was a 1998 functional wine. Anyway, so he goes through this rigmarole, he decants it, and he pretty much dumps the whole bottle of wine in the decanter. There wasn't any sludge in the bottle at all, from what I could tell. And so then he's sniffing and swirling and sniffing, and he gives me the wine.
He was really doing a whole number, and I'm just sitting here going, luckily I was high as a kite, so that helped.
So so he throws down the glass and he's, you know, I take one sniff and of course I probably was acting a little British under your influence and kind of understated my concern for this wine, which was terribly corked.
I think it's corked. This is not entirely right, my dear friend.
No, actually what I said specifically was, because he'd already, you know, checked it out, and most wine stewards would just immediately take the bottle back. And
he took a sip first.
Yeah, and he gives me the wine. I check it out, and I say, which is a way to put it if you want to kind of, you know, slightly. It's
a little.
So I said
down.
To him, I said to him exactly this. So you don't think this wine is corked?
That's true. You did say that after he had just taken the first swig of our wine.
So he takes another check of it, you know. And the weird thing was that wine got worse with the minute.
Yeah.
It took off and became so corked that it was going to stink up the whole place.
Explain to people what that means.
Corked wine is a chemical called TPA that is it's a weird contaminant that used to only come from corks that were rotting, and it smells like a rotting cork, if you can imagine what a rotten cork tastes like. And it has a horrible stench and it has a terrible flavor and it kills any of the fruit the wine might have. Now, the thing that's interesting, they discovered this, actually a French winemaker who's also a chemist discovered some years back, I think in the mid 90s, that this product, this chemical TPA, which I don't have can't think of the chemical name for it, seems to show up in some forms of paint. And so when wineries are painted, just the evaporation of the paint
gets into the wine, huh?
Gets into the wine.
Wow.
In fact, the 1997 BV Private Reserve here in the Napa Valley, because of one of these incidents of paint or something like that, the entire batch of 1997, which is one of the great years in California, Beaulieu sent out a note that if you have any of it, you want to bring it back for a swap, we'll give you something else because, you know, we're sorry.
Wow.
And that was like, that's a big money
deal.
Loser.
Yeah. Hey, now, do you want to do all the restaurants or you want to talk about something else and come back to restaurants later?
Well, I think we should, let's do the restaurants, get them out of the way. And then people who don't want to listen to our political crap, they can turn it off after we're done.
Okay. Now, where do we have dinner next?
Let's just finish this place.
Because
there was one, you know, I figured after I kind of insulted the wine waiter, he, you know, didn't.
No, you were right. You were right, because 5 minutes later, the glass that he had poured for me just was horrible.
Yeah. So anyway, so he came back with a good bottle, and we, you know, then he wouldn't talk to us for a while. But then he finally, you know, swallowed his pride and came back and was more friendly. And then, you know, we went through the meal, which was always these weird flavor combinations that didn't work at all.
No.
And then at the end, he turned us on to a Calvados.
Yes, you're right.
Which is one of the cheapest ones on the list, and I have to go get the name of it or something, because it was like, I'm not a Calvados guy. It was unbelievably great.
Yeah, it was good. It was really good.
I've never had a Calvados as good as that.
There was something good for a dessert as well.
Yeah, I
don't remember.
I'm blanking on the dessert.
I can't remember.
So then anyway, the next thing we did, we had lunch at Fringale, and it was tasteless, and yeah. I was very disappointed.
And they do have a new chef there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and Fringale
I'm not sure he was working that day, but whatever the case was, it seems like, hey, buddy, you know, salt helps a little.
Marinate something for a second. It was just, I had chicken, it sucked. It was just...
Yeah, it was just a piece of chicken. No good. So, no, I was just disappointed there, and, you know, the place has been a little spotty recently. I mean, I have had some really good food there, and...
We've had some great lunches there, and I was extremely disappointed.
I'm wondering whether the chef was working. A lot of these restaurants, they don't do well with the chef gone.
We need to send Gordon over. Straighten those guys out. There's no passion in your cooking, man.
And then we went to a place that's fairly famous, a newer restaurant in San Francisco that people might want to check out when they're here. Because it's really a very, especially if you're French, this place, every time I go there, I go, God, you know, I could be in Paris eating it. Because it's French, not in like a Frenchy way with a bunch of French posters and things like that. It just has a weird French feel to it.
And no Edith Piaf songs either.
Right, none of the cornball stuff. But it just feels French. If you've been to France enough, you go in there and you go, wow, this place, I don't know what it is, but it's
small. Very small.
Yeah, very small.
Say like 50 tables, maybe? Not even. 30 tables?
Yeah, something like that. It's called Quince.
Yeah.
And I've been there, I think, 3 times. And it's a really good restaurant. It's one of the first Michelin starred restaurants in San Francisco. You liked it a little better than I did. I wasn't jacked up.
Well, we went for the tasting menu, which is always kind of an adventure because you're getting a little bit of everything. And I have to say, the way the proportions were set and you know, just when I was saying, are we getting any more after this? Said, no, this is the last one. And it was like, okay, that's perfect. It was the right amount of food for me. We didn't do the matching, so you don't get a specific glass of wine or whatever it is for each tasting menu. We selected our own, which was pretty good.
What was it? It was a Vacareus, is what it was. Actually, yes. Though, I have to give the guy credit because you noticed this immediately, and I thought that was interesting. You noticed,
uh-huh.
And it was a cheap wine. We're talking about a wine in a first-class restaurant for $40.
Yeah, you had actually looked at. You were pointing at something that was more like $100 because I could see what you know. So we were discussing the list, and then he said, "No, you should really try this one. This is good." Yeah, it was like $40.
Yeah, he downsold us, and to me, amazing. A wine steward that downsells you is a wine steward you can trust.
Yeah.
And the wine was outstanding because, I mean, this particular wine is usually nothing special. It's just kind of a drinking wine, which, by the way, when you have a tasting menu, if you go for the tasting menu, generally speaking, you don't want a wine that overpowers the food. And chefs hate it when people, you know, order Lafite or Rothschild or some killer wine that actually distracts from the artistry of their tasting menu. They'd rather have you have something functional that it just, you know, basically washes the food down, slightly neutral, not a bad wine, a good wine, but nothing that so you're not going ooh and ah over the wine all night. That's not what you're taking a tasting menu for. You should be having an inexpensive, functionally, and a good wine with a tasting menu, not some stunning $500 bottle that just blows your head off. Anyway, that's a little tip.
It was good. I can't quite remember. I remember every single dish I liked, but I don't really remember them. You know, it just takes too long.
There was too many. There were too many pasta, starchy dishes for my taste. Hmm. There was a spaghetti thing that had some pieces of meat in it. I didn't like that.
Yeah, I like that.
The soup was good. There was
the Dungeness crab soup was outstanding because it didn't have any like crabby taste. You know, no seafoody taste. It was just
no. It was really good.
Fantastic.
And then at the end, there was some sort of a meat dish of some sort that was a skirt steak. Or a hanger steak or something like that, cut into small slices. It was actually quite nice. And, or it was a, actually, it was a fattier cut. I can't remember. But anyway, and then they had some nice desserts. It's a good place for people to check out.
And it wasn't overly expensive either. And it wasn't cheap, no. but you know, the Ritz-Carlton. Was it the Ritz?
Yeah.
Yeah. That was more expensive.
Yeah. And it probably was less satisfying.
Half as
good. Except for the Calvados, which is whoa.
Yeah, but, you know, that you can't live on Calvados alone.
No, you can have that at the bar. You don't have to eat there.
Oh, wow. So now are we having, we're having one more dinner before I leave Monday?
You're leaving on Monday?
No, I'm leaving on, no, we're eating on Monday, aren't we?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Where are we going?
It's a new place. It's called something like, I actually can't remember the name of it. It's like, it's got some three letter name.
We're going to be adventurous.
Yeah, well, this place I've seen it crops up in the conversation every so often, and then I think, you know, I should check this place out. We're going to go up to Cyrus up in Healdsburg, which is one of the great restaurants in California, but it just seemed like too much work. And so we'll do this place. It's called Ida or Isa or something like that.
I'm looking for the.
I should know the name off the top of my head, but you know, I just, you know, as guys are very experimental. Everything's going to be kind of avant-garde.
And oh boy,
this fusion, and it gets a lot of good reviews.
You're not going to leave me with a bad taste in my mouth. ISA is what it's called on Steiner Street.
Is that it?
Yeah, I'm looking at the. That's pretty cool. We use OpenTable.com.
Yeah, you that get works. Points. Now, there's an interesting thing about Open Table. You get like 100 points every time you book. What are these points for?
I don't know. Can you win a bike?
They've never shown me a list of teddy bears or anything I can get for all these points or a free meal.
We're gonna save for the bike.
I mean, I don't get what these points. They said, you've now got 4,000 points.
With the banana saddle.
So what?
One of those choppers.
What am I getting for these points? I'm always baffled by that.
Fantastic.
And the weird part about it, because they give you these points, whatever they mean, is that you
there's got to be something.
They have these occasional. I only did this once, but I got 1,000 points, because sometimes it's 100 points a reservation. But if there's special deals, if you go to some restaurant that's about to go out of business, they'll give you 1,000 points.
There's incentives. I get it.
There's incentives, but it's like, for what? You get the biggest kick out of that.
We got to figure that out. What those points? Hold on, let me see.
Maybe I should ask them.
Well, wouldn't you expect it to be on the website?
Well, I never really pay much attention to it. I just go in there. By the way, for people out there who are concerned, there's a kind of a belief that there's a back door.
Oh yeah, on the Open Table. Yeah, you've told me about this.
Yeah. So if you're doing some sort of a merger or acquisition, book it through your secretary directly.
Yeah, not through.
Do yourself a favor.
And don't let her use Open Table either.
Right.
When you've earned enough points to exchange for a dining check, spelled with Q-U-E, the option to redeem points will appear on your My Profile page when you log in. Simply click Redeem Points to place your order. Most dining check requests are processed in fewer than 3 weeks. Please allow 6 weeks for delivery. For security reasons, dining checks are sent in plain white envelopes. So watch your mail to ensure yours isn't accidentally discarded. Please note, what is this? This is like a CIA outfit,
what's
man.
What's the minimum points you need to get a dining check?
Well, it doesn't tell you that.
Yeah, right.
And by the way, yes, under the FAQs, dining points will expire. My goodness.
Please.
Yeah, that's bullshit.
Anyway, whatever.
Yeah.
It's still convenient.
So, well, there's a lot we could talk about right now.
Well,
I'm going to kind of leave it to you because I've got an answer to everything.
Yeah. Well, you invested in gold, which was smart.
Thank you. In fact, I bought some more.
Yeah,
I told you like Monday I bought more.
Yeah, I think we're at rock bottom. Although I have a bet with one of my broker friends in Massachusetts who actually owns a brokerage. He's saying 6,000, and the bet my bet is that the market's going to hit 14,000 before it hits 6,000, and when the market was at 10.5 and getting a little flaky, that's when you gave the idea about the, or he says I think it's going to hit 6,000. Well, I think it's going to hit 14 before it hits 6. I'll bet you $100. And then he wouldn't do it. He was chicken. Mm. But now that it like bounced off 7,800 or something, you know, and can kind of rebound it, he's big shot. So he took the bet finally. I can't see it going to 6.
Well,
it's possible, but I'd be shocked.
I'm not quite sure what you base that on because, of course, No one has any information, apparently, just looking at CNBC half the day. But I think it'll go to 7,500 this week. I think that is totally where they're going to keep the bottom for a while. But they have to shock some more. This is my theory. This is completely controlled demolition of the financial system. And I'm happy to explain that more. But yeah,
I think Daily Source Code, ladies and gentlemen, you should listen to his show, Daily Source Code, where he's going to explain that.
Fuck you. So I think 6,000 is absolutely possible.
Yeah, well, yeah. Hey.
I think it's very possible.
I mean, this guy's a professional in the business, and he agrees with you.
So the thing that just blew me away, you know, we talked about... did we talk about it last week? We talked about Iceland, about them, about the country basically going bankrupt. I think we did.
No, I don't think we did. And the thing about, is, like, when I'm reading these stories, I mean, there are a bunch of these Iceland going bankrupt stories. Going bankrupt? What do they do there?
They were in the banking business. That's what. It's only 300,000 people that live there. They were all in the banking business. But check it out, man, because they had high interest rates. Everybody, including all these government services, all the counties in the UK, and it also, I just read in the Netherlands, so I'm sure we'll hear about France and other places, including the London Metropolitan Police had £50 million stored there because of the high interest rate. All those funds are frozen. And then Prime Minister Gordon Brown comes out and says, hey, you know, I'm invoking the terrorism rule on you guys.
What?
Yes. He said, I'm freezing all assets. Everything that has to do with Iceland is now considered a terrorist threat. He invoked the terrorism law.
This is like using RICO for just anything, you know, some women's sewing club.
I'm telling you, now I understand.
Oh, this is ridiculous.
Yeah, I'll shoot you a link. No, it's from the BBC. It's fucking crazy.
Unbelievable.
And this is why they wanted that Lisbon Treaty all set up before October. Surprise, surprise. God bless Ireland.
Good luck getting anything done now.
Well, you know, it's all...
Yes, good day. Ireland, we love you.
Yeah, absolutely. They're standing strong. They're holding back on this. This is nuts. You can't have, you know, so immediately, you know, the IMF and the World Bank show up, of course. These guys, look at them. If you see them on C-SPAN or anywhere else, they're all smiling because they're like, yeah, we do this all the time in Africa. Now we're going to do it to the fucking United States. Hey, you want a loan? Hey, Iceland, you want a loan? Yeah, if you default on the loan, of course, we'll take your firstborn. So Iceland says, nah, screw you guys. And they go to Russia. Politically, this is out of control.
Is that what the Icelanders did?
They asked for a 4 billion euro loan from Russia. And they said the IMF and the World Bank said, no, thank you. We don't like your conditions. You know, which means, you know, of course, they'll take all the mineral assets, they'll own it, whatever Iceland has.
Yeah, it's some scam.
Yeah, what they've done in Africa all these years. Economic hitman style. That's what's happening.
Yeah.
And so now we have all the G7 financial ministers meeting. Tomorrow, the EU financial ministers meet. And the predictions, and this actually, Silvio Berlusconi said this... I think it was yesterday, and he retracted it a couple hours later. He said, you know, the financial markets are all going to shut down for a couple days or maybe a week while we figure it all out and, of course, basically rewrite the rules.
It's been done before.
But it's funny because he immediately retracted that statement. So, no, it's just something I heard on the radio. No world leader actually said that. It's like,
what a bonehead.
Oops. You could just see the red phone ringing. You bald Italian shit. Be quiet about that.
What are you doing?
What are you doing, you dipshit? And you know, so then, of course, they'll fix the whole system. Emphasis on fix. Dude, we can now borrow our own money at interest. This is so cool. But, you know, so our tax money goes into the banks, and then the banks will lend it to you. For a fee. It's nuts.
Genius.
Yeah, of course. For the people who own the world. Oh, man.
Well, the Iceland thing has fascinated me because I guess there's some billionaire there who screwed things up. And, you know, I've been to Iceland. I think I've been there twice.
They over leveraged. They did what everyone else did, except.
Yeah, they got suckered.
Yeah, of course they got suckered.
By the way, there was a funny article of one of these banking groups. It wasn't the IMF. It was some other big overseas groups. And they ranked all the banks. This is blogged, by the way, on Dvorak.org/blog. Look it up. Anyway, they ranked all the banks in the world. And Canada came in number one because they didn't buy into any of this crap. And Britain came in 44 and we came in 40.
That makes sense.
So we came in 40.
Yeah.
And, like I said, Great Britain came in 44th, but we came in 40 just below Namibia. The Namibians have a better banking system than we have. What is wrong with this picture?
Well, I think they're rolling it all up, man. They're all rolling it up into one system. They're going to rewrite the rules, and it'll be based on carbon credits.
We have a one of the bloggers, one of my editors on the Dvorak.org/blog, Dvorak Uncensored site, mm-hmm. has picked up on the over this weekend. There's a rumor going around they're going to try to make an international banking system of some sort that works better.
Well, yeah, isn't that what I just said?
Yeah, that's what you just said. Yeah. That's what you've been saying for a while.
Yeah, and it'll be based on carbon credits. I read those 451 pages, John, and while the media is like, oh, there's wooden arrowheads, blah, 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 blah. If you actually look into this thing, oh, man, it's just hand it all over. Go ahead, go make it. They're just going to make up one banking system. It'll all be rolled up at the top. What?
Carbon credits. What a scam.
Yeah, but that's what it's going to be. It's already in this bill. They're setting it up. Think about it. You know, gold, of course, we know won't work anymore because there's probably not enough gold to cover all the crap, all the paper that's out there. So if you take carbon credits, you can set a random number and say, you know, that's the limit. We can't have any more. Just have the IPCC draw up some stupid document and we'll all buy it like idiots. Have Al Gore do a video clip and we'll go along like stupid sheep.
And you know who one of the guys behind it? It's floating around. Anyone out there can check it out. Which is the George Soros being interviewed by?
Excuse me. How long have I been telling you that George Soros is in this whole game?
This is one of your themes.
Yes, thank you.
I never denied that he's got some influence.
Some influence.
So all he's right. On the Bill Moyers, who's, you know, Bill Moyers, who's this character that, I mean, he's like an interviewer that is like, I have mixed feelings about him. He gets good people, but he's always so like, you know, kind of befuddled by everything. In fact, most of the people in the media, when it comes to, like, if you even bring up, you know, default credit swaps and
what's that? I don't understand.
They don't get it. They don't know. They don't want to know. Anyway, so Soros is on Moyers, and he's like going on and on and on, and be good. You know, so it all sounds pretty good. You know, because he sounds like he's got a grip on it.
And then he turned into a reptile.
Carbon credits.
Carbon credits. Exactly. There you go. The international banking system.
I mean, this is trading. This is just completely. To me, it's like baffling how it's talk about the emperor has no clothes. There's no such thing. I mean, carbon credits.
Dude.
It's like a total control freak thing. It's ridiculous.
And people love this. Oh, yeah. Let me do my part to save the world. Yes. I can. You know, when
carbon footprint. I want to reduce my carbon footprint.
When you book EasyJet, right, which is the website is easy, the flying is easy, but the prices are getting out of control, of course, you know. Just general commodity prices, et cetera. But you've got, you know, you buy a ticket and you get all these extra, you know, taxes. And then it actually says they have after you've booked, you know, oh, I only have two suitcases, so they'll only be 24 pounds. Then they have the audacity to say, hey, you know, you can reduce all of your carbon usage on this flight. That'll be another 50 pounds. And they're actually taking your money right there. They'll take it as carbon credits.
Unbelievable.
And people do that.
I think we need to start
an idiots.
I think you, I, and a few investors, we need to start GreenJet.
GreenJet. That's right.
GreenJet.
When we're at 37,000 feet, we turn off the engines and we coast.
There's no reason to keep the engines going. It's
fuck
a fraud.
No. As long as you get up high enough, we can just coast that fucker all the way down. No problem.
GreenJet.
Come float the friendly skies. Coast into credit. Coasting for carbon. Yeah,
just there have like go. No aisles. You know.
So, you know, this is totally the whole thing. I'm so convinced of it.
It's a scam.
But we're falling for it, man.
It's a scam. We're being scammed. Hopefully everyone's being scammed. We know that. So let's get to the debate and try to get see what we can come up with.
All right. Now, are you downloading something? Because you're breaking up a little bit.
No, I'm not downloading anything, as a matter of fact.
Oh, shit. You know, no, it's good enough.
But, you know, I have a browser open on the other computer. Let me go turn it off.
Yeah, please do that.
It won't help.
Yeah, it's funny because I've, you know, so the signal has dropped out twice during the show, and I know that's the problem on my end, but now I have full signal. There's usually not a problem. I'm not downloading anything, I don't think. I was looking at... you know, people should...
I mean, it's always possible that somebody's latched on, you know, some person is somehow... I've got pretty good encryption, so it seems unlikely, but it's always possible that somebody outside...
Or on mine. It could be mine too. I mean, you know, at the end of the day, I'm in a huge apartment building, so maybe that milfy neighbor is downloading porn again. I'll get you.
Yeah, let's talk about that neighbor.
You know, I have not seen her since that one time.
Have you talked about her on Daily Source Code?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, well, for people that listen to just to this show, Adam has a next door neighbor and he lives in this condo thing in San Francisco. It's one of these fancy buildings, you know, with a guard out in front. And BMW is coming in and out and a few Bentleys kind of thing.
Hold on. Hey, John.
Hold on a second.
This connection is just getting too shitty. Let me just call you right back. It'll be worth it. All right?
Right.
All right. Oh, man. I hate that so much with a passion. All right, let's try this again. Okay, we're back. You were going to talk about my milfy neighbor.
Yeah, you know, my connection, by the way, I'm going to have to discuss this with my...
it was on your end this time. There was something really weird.
I think so. I'm getting, according to this thing, 1.6 megabits down, as opposed to 16, which I normally get. Mm. And I can't figure out what the deal is, because this isn't working right here on the whole place. Unless something, you know, I was gone for a few days, I turn off the modem, and next thing, maybe it doesn't come back to life, right? I don't know.
Well, it sounds
yeah,
okay now.
You have a milfy neighbor.
Don't mess with anything. Yeah, and she's beautiful, but I have not seen her since one quick conversation we had where she was like, oh, I work 2 hours a day for Obama, and I know she could see it in my face.
The look of disappointment.
Well,
work 2 hours a day for Obama.
Yeah,
and she said, "I like that guy, Obama."
No, even I'm not that sleazy. You know, because I knew
Obama rocks.
I knew I'm so stupid. Of course, the going through my head is like, don't say anything, don't get into it. Because usually I'll say, oh, I hate both those guys. I hate McCain and Obama. You know, this is a total sham. I'm like, don't get into it, don't get complicated. And by then it was too late, you know. But you're right, I should have totally said, man, he's the bomb. He's so the bomb.
He's the bomb.
Can you come over to my place and I'll show you my Obama posters?
Obama. 2 hours, holy mackerel.
Oh, by the way, this is so funny. You may have blogged this, but it showed up on the drop.io/noagenda. Apparently, you know, so there's early voting, and in upstate New York, on the ballot, absentee voting, a whole slew of ballots went out, and you could choose the name Barack Osama.
What?
Exactly.
That was the name?
Yeah, instead of Barack Obama, it said Barack Osama.
Well, that sounds corrupt.
On the ballot.
I love it. Good move. That's the best the Republicans can do.
Oh, my goodness. That's so funny. Osama.
Okay, well, let's talk about the debate.
I mean, I've talked about this on Daily Source Code. I can be really, you know, short. It's just the thing. So it was a lousy TV show. It was a stupid set. They promised us a town hall meeting. Well, that was bullshit. It was a set with bleachers. There wasn't even like a fake. Yeah, they could have at least done a faux kind of like capital looking building type set. They could have done that with some arches and made it look, you know, a little different. And no, I mean, cause, you know, this is McCain's thing, and not that I give a shit who wins, because both of them are run by evil people. It has been pretty funny to see how David Letterman and Jon Stewart have made a lot of fun of that debate, because it was pretty prone to video editing and doing some cool stuff with it, particularly McCain roaming around while Obama was talking. They got some isolated cameras instead of doing some funny stuff. But otherwise, it was pretty boring. Although I will say, I thought it was interesting that John McCain said, and this is more not so interesting about what he said, but about the public's reaction. He said, you know, wouldn't you want your mortgages to be bought up and then, you know, sold back to you at a better rate on a 30-year? And the mainstream media picks this up as, what an idiot. How can he say something stupid like that? And people start repeating that. And I'm thinking, you know, that's actually not a bad idea.
Actually, Soros had a similar idea, which is kind of the irony of that. So I'm sure the mainstream media is like confused now. Oh, wait a minute. Soros says it's a good idea too. Well, maybe let's just stop talking about it. Well, it's horrible. I mean, the mainstream media is just really, it's deteriorated.
There's not a single program or station you can watch where you're actually getting any information.
So I thought it was interesting that Obama had this stylish way of sitting with his suit on. He looked like he was in GQ for a photo shoot.
Yeah, he looked hot. Totally.
A big smile on his face.
I like that. No, he was good. He definitely had that whole, you know, there were bar stools or something like that. He felt very comfortable.
Let me mention a couple of things that I noticed that I wrote on. I have this big giant box that I've written all his notes on.
Okay.
And the reason I did this because it was going to be, if you take a big box, by the way, this is a tip for people out there.
Then you won't lose your notes? Is that what this is about?
You got it. Yep. I got this big, huge box. So I can show it to you. I can take a picture of it.
I believe you. Please do that.
What can I say?
Take a picture of your workroom anyway. I wouldn't mind seeing that.
My note.
Write that on your box, okay? I took some notes too.
This box. Yeah, but see, I would have lost the notes if they were on paper. Mm. But the big box is like laying around the house, and it's like, yo, it's this box.
What's
I
this fucking box?
It.
Oh, yeah, I remember. All right.
It's got notes on, let's see, one. I got most of the sites covered. But anyway, so okay. So both these guys are kind of boneheads, but my favorite is Obama. Well, I have a lot of favorites, but one of them, I'm going to start with some of the notes on this box. I actually wrote too many notes. Obama's going on spending time talking about Kennedy, Roosevelt, and doubling the Peace Corps. You remember that? I think we're going to double the Peace Corps. Yeah. Say, hey, buddy, I thought you were supposed to be the future change. This is like, you know.
Go back to the 60s.
The Republicans have a good point about him looking backwards all the time, because that's what he's doing. Kennedy, Roosevelt, the Peace Corps. So, okay, so I got a little note. I'm going to spend time and the blah, blah, blah. Define spending, $6.8 billion savings, overhead projector. Oh.
The overhead projector, yeah.
The overhead projector story.
And Obama kept saying, look, you know. I don't like it when people do that. Just don't. That's condescending. Look. Hey, you.
Look.
You slave. Look. Look. Look at me when I'm talking to you, or I'll tase you.
Somebody said living high on the hog. I didn't make a note who it was. McCain mishandled a small business tax deal. He screwed it up because they could harp on that. Here's the thing. Obama says something about, and I think I wrote this up in a piece. Obama went on about, you know, nobody's going to have to pay more, you know, for people making over $250,000 and this and that, you know, are going
to. This is definitely you falling away here, John.
Fact of the matter is all small businesses make about over a quarter of $1 million a year. And the way the taxes are done, that's kind of that's your tax.
It seems like a lot of money anymore. 250 grand is
not for a small business. It's not when you got
no. payroll.
Not at all. And McCain dropped the ball on it because he's never run a small business. Obama's never run a small business. None of these guys have.
Nope.
So they, you know, basically going to soak everybody. So the small business guys are going to have to raise prices, and it's just going to screw the middle class that he's trying to fix. Anyway, I thought that was, but McCain had said nothing about it. He let it go. Roll, there it goes. Yeah. There's an opportunity shot.
But also, John,
and here's another note I made.
One second. These guys are tired. You know, they're just reading the script at this point because it is a rock show. They're all over the place. They're flying all over the country. It's a very, very irregular life. It is living on the road. It's like being a rock star. These guys are tired, man. They're just, no wonder they're missing stuff. This is an outrageous performance they're giving, really.
Yeah, it's like they're over the hill, both of them. They suck. By the way, I want to mention something here for everyone who likes to listen to right-wing talk radio. I got the biggest kick in one of the guys who made this flaw, and I think they've all pretty much done it, but a lot of the strategists, too. And the one I'm pointing the finger at here is Rush Limbaugh, who does, but he's not the only one. It's like... And the argument goes like this. Look, Biden made all these really good attacks on Obama. And Hillary had these fantastic things that she had brought up against Obama. Why he should lose. And what was why you shouldn't vote for him. Why isn't McCain picking this up and going with this, you know, with these great arguments that these two people made? And the first thing that comes to my mind is, hey, those guys lost with those arguments.
Yeah, exactly. The negative thing isn't working. It just does not work. People are sick and tired of it. They really are.
Right. Yeah.
And when either one of the candidates, because I did watch CNN this time, when either one of the candidates goes all patriotic, you know, boom, people just love it. Nationalism, boing, boing, spike in the charts on both sides.
Yeah, nationalism's in.
I'm so afraid.
But apparently neither one of them get that.
I was going to say, just for the country's sake, I really hope Obama wins. I really do. I mean, I don't want to either.
Why?
Because, you know, if he loses, oh man, it'll be riots. It's going to be messed up. I see the hatred. I feel the tension. Please, I want him to win. And then I can just, you know, every day I'll have a new show and say, well, he lied about that. Oh, gee, he's not going to do that. Oh, well, look, we're still at war. Oh, look, you know, oh, the economy's still shit. You know, it'll be a lot more interesting. And it will be a lot, you know, then maybe that rage will be converted into something else when they find out that he's just a front man and a shill.
Yeah, well, that's what, you know, Brzezinski and Soros and those guys will be running the country.
Yep.
So, or raping it.
Yep.
I thought it was weird that let's face it, McCain is losing this election because he turns out to be a weak candidate. He doesn't look good on television. He doesn't present himself well. He's doing a crappy job. I mean, it's not that he can't win, but it's like, you know, maybe this thing is rigged so he doesn't win.
Well, so that's the real question. So he comes up with is the voting machines, you know, and all that. I mean, that's where maybe it doesn't even matter. Maybe it's just academic, dude. I have no trust.
You're calling me dude a lot. Did you notice that?
Don't tase me, bro.
Let's see here. An elegant walking. The other thing is in this town hall meeting, which was hardly that, McCain looks terrible wandering around. He's like he's going to, you know, because it's not like a close, intimate thing. He's like walking. He looks like a robot because he's so beat up from the, you know, his days. And you know, Obama's kind of slick and he's moving around.
Yeah.
So I thought that was bad. That didn't look good.
What McCain is good at, and I have seen it more on C-SPAN than anywhere else. You know, when he's in a crowd, and obviously there's no opponent there, but when he's in a crowd, he works the audience. He's great. But this wasn't an audience. It's like half. You know, it was a stacked audience. They had all preset, pre-configured questions. Everyone knew what was coming, and everyone sat there and read the script. In fact, Tom Brokaw at the end said, "Dudes, get out of my way. I can't read the script."
Oh, damn it. I got this really good quote here, but I only have part of it, but I don't remember what it was a reference to. But Obama said one of the dumbest things ever.
About the internet?
I'm going to have to make No, it wasn't about the internet because It was something else that predates the internet, and it was the stupidest thing he's ever said. Ah, man.
Well, he had a
commitment. Okay, well, I'm going to have to do a search on the whole
thing. I'll help you. Maybe I'll trigger something. So,
This is before the internet. It was something that there was a reference to something, some technology, but it wasn't.
Well, no, what he said, the bonehead thing I heard was it started out just like a research project. That's what made the personal computer. And it was made as a government research defense project. And what he meant was the internet, but he said computers.
Okay, well, then he said it this way, because I got the exact quote, and it may have been about computers, and it was the following. Invented by government scientists for defense purposes, right, so we could better communicate. Oh, this is it. This was the invention of the original computer,
yeah,
the UNIVAC, the thing in during the war.
Yeah.
So, yeah, okay, that's what it was. So when the first computer was invented, which is arguably in 1930 or 1940, depending on what timeline you want. He said the following: invented by government scientists for defense purposes so we could better communicate. It wasn't about communication. It was about calculating artillery shells and other things. The computer wasn't used for communications until there was networking, which took a long time to develop. So this is just bull.
Yep. That sounded good.
So he's
though.
Essentially, I've noticed this with this guy. He makes it up as he goes along.
Yep.
He sounds good. He reminds me of like my kids when they were like 12. They just say, stuff off the top of their head as though it was true.
I love it when
and that really bothers me about this.
I love
character.
It when he explains, when he does all the numbers about it'll be $2,500. And if you're making less than $250,000, John McCain wants to tax your rebates. For the first time, you're going to tax this. And you're like, huh? And my eyes are rolling and my head is swimming. Like, and now am I getting that good deal or not? I don't understand it anymore. And he did the, we have 3% of the world's oil. We use 25%.
Oh, I hate this. I've been getting some email on this. I hate this bullshit. I can't believe that they get away with it. We have 3% of the oil reserves and we consume 25% on a yearly basis. That 3% of the oil reserves could represent 100 years of use for us.
That's huge.
But it's like the way they structure it, it's a bogus, specious argument. It just galls me every time I hear it.
Well, but most people can't get past the voting numbers on American Idol, John. That's the problem. This is the type of numbers we understand. Ah, okay. Got more votes. Got it.
I got two to one.
Maybe if I text, I can change something in the world.
Most people didn't. They never bring up the fact, by the way, that coal, we're the Saudi Arabia of coal in the United States. We have enough coal. Forget all the alternative energy stuff. We have enough coal, if we just use that, to power the country, which would include everything, for the next 350 years.
And there's a lot of clean coal technology now that is really, really good.
There's tons.
And has a very high carbon credit rating. But it seems like McCain took McCain took another donation from the Nuclear Association. My goodness. He was rolling out plant after plant. Yeah, it was pretty, wow.
We're sitting on so much coal, we could make electric cars and do that whole thing with the coal that we have.
And it would actually create
for
jobs.
For 350 years, how much longer do you want?
And it could create jobs.
I'm sorry, what?
It could create jobs.
Yeah, it would.
It could be huge. So you were harping, because we did talk right after the debate. We had a quick chat, and you were harping about the handshake thing, where Michelle Obama didn't shake anyone's hand, and John McCain tapped.
Oh yeah,
Obama. But Michelle.
I got a blog that.
Well, maybe you don't want to. Michelle Obama was on Jon Stewart's show, and by the way, outstanding performance. She did a great job. And she said, "Oh, yeah, that was really overblown." She did a whole junket. She was on Larry King. She's hitting all the shows that matter. And she said, "We had already greeted each other backstage, and we had already exchanged our pleasantries. So with that context, it's like, okay, they probably weren't aware of the top shot that the camera was. Although stupid if they aren't, but they weren't thinking about it." And so, you know, I think that was just an incorrect perception.
Okay. I'll take her word for it. I'm not going to. It makes it easier on me.
I got to tell you, I like her. She is, she's a little powerhouse, but not little, actually. She could probably sit on me. She's huge. She's bigger than Obama.
Oh, she's twice the size of it. She's gonna be. She must weigh twice as much as Obama does.
No, but she's taller, and he's not short.
No, he's like 6'1".
Yeah. No, she's taller. Like, whoa. No,
she's a basketball. She's like a big girl. So I thought this was a funny line from McCain. I'm sorry I missed that thing.
Oh, can I just say one more thing about
she sent me a text message.
One more thing about Michelle. Because John Stewart, I love this. He brought it up. He said, what was that thing with all those kids and of course, that's the video we referred to a couple of times done by Hollywood insiders with those hypnotized kids who were saying, Obama's here to save the world, whatever the hell they were singing. And her response was quite interesting. I'm sure you can find it somewhere on the YouTube or Hulu or whatever. She said, oh, yeah, no, we shut that down really quick. I was like, whoa.
Well, they have a clue.
Yeah.
These Hollywood guys are the boneheads.
Yeah, indeed. Okay, I'm sorry.
You know, they think they're doing somebody a favor when they're screwing them. So here's the McCain line. Everything I learned was from a chief petty officer.
Oh, yeah, right.
Thought that was interesting.
And then, what did Obama say? He had a good line. What do you not know that you still have to learn? And he said, well, right up there is Michelle. She knows everything. I mean, wow, that was so good.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, I believe that Obama won that debate.
Oh, totally.
And here's another thing I didn't like McCain doing. McCain constantly saying my friends in that kind of patronizing manner. And then he also, kept throwing in that old sales trick, which doesn't even work anymore. And it sounds terrible. Like, for example, if I'm talking to you, Adam, I'd be saying, so Adam, what do you think, Adam?
Yeah, right.
You know, that kind of thing. He kept doing that with Tom Brokaw. I said, well, Tom, yeah. I did blah, 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 Tom, yeah. Blah, 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 blah. Hey, we know who he is. Okay. I mean, or you're forgetting yourself. I mean, I just find it extremely annoying. And I hear people doing it all the time. It's a sales trick, but it's an old fashioned one from the 50s or something that nobody likes. Well, John, what do you think about this? John, I think you did John. I know my name.
You're so right. You are so right. Meanwhile, his face has fallen off. We got a little extra delay on Skype tonight, by the way.
Yeah, I figured that out.
Yeah.
Which makes the show sound crappy for people out there that don't realize that, sometimes the timing between the two of us in terms of a reaction is because the Skype itself is like, not working right.
Not cooperating.
He also had this hair. He had a hair transplant joke.
Yeah, that fell pretty flat.
And then he kind of went dead, and then he says, well, I might need one myself. You know, it was like, I guess, a slam against Biden or something, because I think, it was actually not Sarah Palin, but it was Tina Fey. You know, I think that these characters are starting getting mixed up in the public minds. And where Tina Fey, on her fake debate with the Joe Biden character on Saturday Night Live, calls him out on his hair plugs.
I'm telling you, man, these guys are so tired, they don't know what they're saying anymore. And by the way, fire the writer, John, for this episode of our reality show known as the Presidential Debates. Fire the writers. They sucked.
Yeah, definitely. Where's Karl Rove when you need him?
Yeah,
I don't think they're using him.
No, I don't know if they've got to be using him, and probably
no. I'm convinced that they're not.
Now they're doing all the commercials. They're really laid in really hard and heavy with the commercials. This whole thing
not done right. No finesse.
No,
Karl Rove is a master of finesse.
Do you think they fired him?
No, they never hired him. That's the problem.
Well, they did some things right. They got a lot of virals. They're doing really well with that. But it's something changed. I mean, this was bad.
Well, it's just, I think from the beginning when McCain went into the tank and then the party, because I had all these, I had this prediction about he was going to be the nominee no matter what, because I think it was promised to him. And I think the party, pushed everybody aside in one way, shape, or form, and they left Huckabee in the race to make sure Romney couldn't get in. That was the reason for that.
That was the strategy, yeah.
And so it was a Huckabee ploy, and so then the next thing McCain sneaks back into the thing, and he gets what he was promised probably in 2000 when they screwed him, and I think it was probably Karl Rove who did it back then, which means, and I think McCain is not the type of guy who says, wow, you screwed me good, I'd like you to work for me. I think he's more of the guy who says, you screwed me, get out of my face.
Yeah, I hope people understand. I hope people understand that this is exactly how it works, and there is all this huge politicking going on behind the scenes, and people are promised something, and I heard that that Biden, he didn't even accept Obama's, when they were scoping him out. He said, first of all, he said, no, I don't want to do that. And then he has all these, he has like a whole list, like a rider, no red M&Ms and all this stuff. Biden's got a whole deal going on.
Hmm. The weird thing about Biden that was pointed out to me, Andrew Horowitz and I do a occasional podcast on the stock market.
Yeah, it's good.
And which you like?
Yeah,
you seem to enjoy.
Yeah, I heard the last one you guys did too.
He brought up the fact that Biden's net worth is $250,000.
Yeah, that's like nothing.
How does that work? The guy's been in the Senate for 30 years. If he just bought like a plot of land in Georgetown, when he first got there for whatever you'd pay then, which would be next to nothing.
Yeah, it'd be multimillionaire.
He'd be a multimillionaire. So how does he end up with a net worth of $250,000 unless he's a complete financial incompetent?
Did he vote for the bailout package?
It says, wait a minute, let's go back over this. This is a steady job that pays in six figures, that has lots of perks, free medical, all kinds of other things you get out of it, not to mention probably a few stock tips that are worthwhile. And he has a net worth of $250,000?
Where did this information come from? Is this like a big thing now everyone's talking about?
Well, the people in the financial community, I guess. But nobody's brought it up.
Chris Matthews.
First I heard of it.
Let me see. Or at... Hold on a second. That's interesting. Well, I mean, I heard it on the way Andrew said it when I was listening to the show. He said it so matter of factly. I'm like, oh, does everybody know this?
Now for tonight's big number. Yeah. The lifestyles of the presidential candidates have become the topic du jour this presidential cycle. Senator McCain is still catching fire from the defenders of the little people for saying he didn't know how many
shut up. Owns.
And the Republicans continue to paint Obama.
This guy's an idiot.
House as an elitist.
Just get to
Where
the bit
Joe
already.
Biden fit into all this competitive poor mouthing? Well, last year, the Washington Post did a review of all the assets of all the presidential candidates, including their spouses. Senator Biden's estimated net worth, total value after all the mortgages, $100,000 to $150,000. This guy has spent his whole life in public service and says he took a second mortgage on his house to pay for one of his kids' education. That's a big counter to any elitist charges against the new Democratic ticket. The man from Scranton's $100,000 to $150,000 net worth. Tonight's a big number.
That's even worse.
Wait.
That was it. That was the whole clip.
He paints this as a... He paints this as positive?
Yeah, because he's a regular Joe. Say it ain't so, Joe. He's Joe Sixpack.
He's a regular bonehead. I mean, I don't care. I mean, there are guys working at the steel mill with better net worth than that.
It was MSNBC. NBC. That's why it's good. Yeah, it's good. It's good. He's a regular guy. He's not rich.
Unbelievable that they would paint that as a positive thing.
Yeah.
30 years, and all he can accumulate is $150,000, even though Andrews thinks it's $250,000, but $150,000 net worth being in the Senate for decades, and, having...
If you have a car loan, you're already halfway there.
Unbelievable. And the fact that they paint this as a positive thing is even more astonishing to me. It's like they should be concerned. They should be kind of shocked and dismayed. They shouldn't think, well, this is great. The guy's broke. He's a bum.
Yeah, but John, this is the thing that I keep telling you. We've become such maniacs in this country. We're so all over this Obama, Biden, and we love it, and it's so beautiful. Whenever these guys do something stupid, idiotic, or treasonous, it's like, oh, well, yeah. But he's the hope. He's bringing change. Yeah, but he's lying. Yeah, but there's hope that he's not lying.
There's hope. There's hope that he's not lying. Yeah. What else? What else we got to depress the public?
I'm actually not depressed.
I'm not depressed either. It's just actually kind of entertaining.
The
stock market is kind of depressing, I think, but
I'm
short.
I don't give a shit. I don't give a shit about the stock market.
I'm short.
Yeah.
I am.
No, I don't care about that.
I mean, as far as I'm concerned, yeah, go down more. I don't care. But, you know, there's a lot of these really interesting, again, I don't want to keep cross promoting, but that's what I do. It pays off, you know that.
Hell yeah.
But Andrew and I are going to go over some of these financial vehicles. But one of the things that people should know about their 401ks is that with the 401k or any of these, you know, IRAs, SEP IRAs, whatever you want to call them, whatever you have, they are, and mine's in the tank because I haven't really been paying much attention to it. And you can see, by the way, there's a couple of things here. One is the collapse of the stock market blew out most people's 401ks, which is the message that people need to know about privatizing Social Security.
Yes.
You privatize Social Security and you end up with a bunch of people that don't know anything about anything, investing in stocks on tips or
losing all their money. Yeah.
Losing all their money. It's a bad idea. And I really am distressed about the Republicans and their promotion of it because it's extremely irresponsible. Now, but people should know this too. One of the problems that a lot of people are going to run into that have a really strong 401k or a good, you know, one of these investment programs where you do your own investing is you can't short. You can't short the market in the investment portfolio. It's just illegal.
It's only on growth.
You can buy stock. You can buy, you know, property now. There's different ways you can even buy land and put it in there. But there are investment vehicles that are actually shorts. And they're called ETFs, the exchange traded funds. And an exchange traded fund, you buy it, but the fund itself is shorting a segment of the market that you think is going to go down. And so you can actually short the market within your 401k by buying exchange traded funds that are shorts.
I'll write that.
It's a great trick. People need to know about this because not now, because I think the market's,
and not ever because it's all going away. Forget about it.
When the market skyrockets, which will happen after one of these two guys gets elected, which it will, it'll go up again and go up and up and up, and then it's going to go down again because it goes up and it goes down. It goes up, it goes down. Hello. But anyway, when it's going down, there's no reason to be long in a bunch of stocks. Look into some of these short-sighted, you know, ETFs. And just short that way. It's a chicken. It's kind of a trick that people should know about. And there's a lot of them, by the way. These ETFs, a bunch of companies put them together. PowerShares is one of the better ones.
I thought it was kind of cute that, because I remember them hanging this up in New York near Times Square. The national debt clock ran out of digits. That was kind of cute.
Oh, yeah.
Who would have thought that?
Yeah, we ran that on the blog.
Yeah, no, I think everybody did.
Yeah, the debt.
It was a typical human interest piece that throw away at the end of the 6 o'clock news, you know, to fill up time.
I think every man and woman and child or something like that, we all owe $80,000 or something like that to the national debt.
Something outrageous.
Anyway, but.
Oh, I did just want to say one thing. Go ahead.
Well, I'm going to say, you've been out here for longer than usual. Are you getting sick of it?
Oh, hell yeah.
The weather, by the way, you caught great weather.
Yeah, weather's been fantastic. Yeah, I'm homesick. I told you that. I'm homesick. I want to go home. But it's been really good because we basically started up, you know, the whole production studio. We've got the hosted channels running. It's been good. You know, this is something that we were, now was the time to do it. And I wanted to really make sure I was here personally. And, you know, all these kids, man, at the office, they figured it out. They got it. So they're rolling. So my job is done.
So you're going to take off, I hope, soon?
Thanks. Yes, I'm midweek. I'm going back. I got a family thing, and then I'm coming back on like the Monday or Tuesday after that because we got a board meeting, and I don't want to miss that. So then I'll be out for another week or so.
I'm sorry for interrupting because again the timing's wrong on this connection, but. I just back to the Obama McCain thing. I just wanted to say this before. Did you notice they're both left-handed?
Yes, I did notice that.
Isn't that weird?
That is interesting. What are the chances of that, huh? What are the actual statistical chances of two presidential candidates running against each other who are both left-handed? It's just another piece of the puzzle that proves my theory that they are working for the same party.
The left-handed, the leftorium.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, okay, let's back to your, sorry I interrupted you, because and unfortunately I always interrupt you because of this lousy
stupid
Skype
delay.
Connection we have, which is weird since we have a better connection when you're in England.
I don't know what it is, man. You know, I can call in again, but, you know, why bother?
Yeah.
It kind of works. Let me see, what time are we at here? Yeah, we can pretty much wrap it up anytime anyway.
Anyway, you were saying you were enjoying it. You're going to take off for a while. You're going to come back.
Right. Yeah. So
because of the board meeting.
Yeah. So I would have stayed for another, cause then at the end of the month, the 27th, I think I'm speaking or I'm on a panel at Digital Hollywood in Los Angeles. And, now that we have the new guy coming in, Jeff Karp, there's some time, to do that kind of stuff, which is also important. Not that I like it, though, honestly. In fact, I kind of despise it.
What, flying back and forth and back and forth and back and forth?
No, that's not it. It's the...
Flying from London to...
I don't like doing conferences and panels and speeches. I just don't dig it.
Oh, yeah, some people don't like it. So, I think the thing that would be annoying is the flying back... London to Los Angeles is a miserable flight.
No, it's a great flight because I catch up on all my movies. Virgin is really good. They refresh their movies every single month. And they're pretty current, so they got some good studio deals. That's really part of their offering, and I'm very appreciative of it. So
yeah.
I watch three movies, read a book, and then I'm done, and then I'll sleep, I'll eat, and then I've landed, and then I just keep going. So I don't need any turnaround time. I just march right on through.
Yeah, well, I actually catch up on my. I may have a trip to Portugal. Coming up, and I catch up on a lot of movie watching myself, and I usually if I bring enough reading material, I catch up on a bunch of stuff I would have never read. The Economist is like a magazine I should be reading religiously from cover to cover, but I don't have time, and but when I'm on a plane or something, I'll have a bunch of them, I'll just read them all, and even when they're like a month or two old, the articles are just fascinating.
Although The Economist, because, we at one of our earlier shows, you told me I should be reading this, and I do pick it up at every flight as well, along with, I'll pick up Newsweek and Time, depending on what's on the cover. So those are really bullshit, flimsy. They're shadow of their former selves, as far as I'm concerned. But The Economist.
What, The Economist?
Newsweek and Time. But The Economist.
Oh, yeah, they're dead. They're dead.
They're like comic books. That's how thin they are. It's totally nothing.
Yeah.
But then The Economist, I got to tell you, they do have a lot of fluff in there. You got to really find the good articles and, really the main feature, because it fills up with a lot of junk.
I think they're good when they get to when they do Africa stuff.
Yeah,
and I think they're really good with Asia. I think with Europe and the United States, I think that's where most of the, because they don't know what's going on like everybody else, and I think they just founder.
I'm just looking through the notes here. That Bill Moyers interview, George Soros was on. I have a note here that says he was talking about a better world order. So that they've changed the name a little bit now. It's no longer a new world order. It's a better world order.
it's like a marketing speak.
Well, yeah. You know? Yeah. People will love it.
Better world order. What the hell is that supposed to mean?
That means one bank, one government.
And what's the...
And repeat after me. I am free. Yeah. I am free.
I am free. Run by those guys.
Yeah. Yeah.
Run by those guys.
Yep. Those guys indeed.
Anyway. Yeah. Well.
Now just tell me. This does bother you, right? I mean, you were born in right after the Second World War. Doesn't matter. Now, come on. I just want to ask you a question for a second. So
I was born after the Second World War, yes.
Yeah. So you, like I, really have not ever been in a war situation because, of course, you know, the wars that although continuously ongoing, they really haven't. Well, I guess you witnessed Vietnam a lot closer. But the times that we're in now, is this like the weirdest time you've ever witnessed throughout history? Has it gotten progressively worse? And the reason why I asked, John, I happened to be looking at John Lennon, an interview like 30 years ago when he did that, when he was with Yoko and did that Give Peace a Chance. And he did the Amsterdam Hilton for a week in bed and all that stuff. But this interview, he's like, you know, our governments are run by maniacs. And they're total lunatics. And he's basically, you know, saying the same stuff I'm saying, only 35 years ago. And I'm just wondering, has it gotten worse in your opinion, in your experience?
No.
It's always been this bad, or what is it?
Yeah. No, it's pretty much like this. Well, the problem is that you have this, like, you know, if you get me going on this again, my cycle stuff. The problem you run into, and I'm old enough to have gone through one of the cycles, even though it was a mild cycle, which was the depression that began in 1969, or the stock market crash in 1969, and then a 10-year period of weirdness. You couldn't get, it didn't work for about a year and a half after I graduated from college. And, you know, so throughout the 70s, you ended up with stagflation, and then you had these, you know, price controls, and then there was OPEC decided to cut us off from oil, so there were lines in the oil. I mean, it's actually worse in the 70s than it is now from my perspective. And then, you know, then you ended up with Jimmy Carter coming in, and he was a complete bonehead. And of course, he was run by Brzezinski, your buddy, and, you know, and the same people that are going to be running Obama's operation. So we're going to have Carter again, as far as I can tell, if Obama gets in. And the interest rates were like 22%. Oh. If you wanted to get a home loan, you had to pay 22% interest rates, and it was ridiculous. Oh. And so it was a complete disaster, and I think it was much worse during the 70s than it is now. This thing is pretty isolated. It's the financial institutions. It sounds bad, but like a lot of people say, hey, I don't have any money in the stock market. What difference does it make to me? The public is not in the market. Their pension funds are, but they can throw the, you know, bricks at the pension fund managers as opposed to the market itself for that problem. So, no, this is, I think, mild. I think the big one is yet to come. I think a real whopper is around the corner, not tomorrow, not, you know, I'm thinking the end of next year or perhaps a year after. But this is bull. This is not a big deal. Everyone.
So what you're saying, though, this is interesting because, actually I learned the whole word stagflation from you. I think you mentioned this word to me before. Was it ever even mentioned on CNBC? Even then you could see puzzled looks. What is stagflation? But this pumping of money, and of course it's being printed since we don't actually have it. You know, they might try and borrow some from somebody, but it's doubtful. So they're just going to print it. Doesn't that just by definition means that we're going to get, inflation, perhaps the hyperinflation you've spoken about previously, which will just devalue our money? And luckily it's worldwide now, of course, because it's all been harmonized and synchronized, and they're controlling the money supply manually and in unison. But won't we get a super stagflation now? And it's not going to happen tomorrow, but won't that happen in the next 2 years?
Well, I get the sense, because every time one of these economic downturns, a legitimate one, takes place, it always has a different form. And I'm a little concerned about the situation we're having now, because it's possible we could fall into the abyss, like some people like to think that we're doing. And then we, you know, just kind of go into a depression without a boom. It would really be annoying, because the real problem that I'm looking at in terms of the nature of things is that we had a crash – a kind of a natural crash that took place after the dot-com boom, that it was exacerbated by the 9/11 situation, which resulted in almost a decade of
this bear market. This is Naomi Klein's shock doctrine theory. Is they keep hitting you with shocks. So at first we had, as you say, we had dot-com, and then we had the real estate, and you know what's next? Infrastructure. That's what's going to happen next. It's all going to be privatization of all the roads, the tunnels, the whatever. We're going to get a huge, huge bubble, and that's going to be the one. And that may be 2 years. That may be your because we need jobs, so let's do infrastructure. All the infrastructure projects are out of money. They all need like $80 billion, per state. The states are out of money.
There's a lot of possible scenarios. The thing about big crashes and big downturns, they're always different. And so you don't know if it's going to be stagflation. I mean, the one thing we've never had in this country, which is, just ripe, because it will fix so many things and at the same time cause a lot of problems, which is hyperinflation, which I've talked about before, because then you can pay off. So, let's give everybody $600. Let's give them $1 trillion, and we'll just, they'll owe it to us, or we'll just borrow a trillion from the Chinese, and then we'll give it to the Wall Street guys, and then they owe us and we owe them. And meanwhile, the dollar goes into hyperinflation, and that $1 trillion I'm holding, by the way, I have here, I'm going to blog it probably this next week, a $10 million, that's what it says, $10 million bill from Zimbabwe.
Oh, you got one. Good.
And
they just made new ones today or yesterday. They just made new, they had to do it again. The zeros wouldn't fit.
Yeah. Well, the problem is that it's a really funny bill. You'll get a kick out of seeing it. I'm looking for some Mugabe money with his picture on it. I still haven't gotten that, but I'll mention the guy. I have his name. I'll plug him that sent me the bill. But anyway, it says $10 million, and I've never seen money like this. This is the funniest thing. It's $10 million, and it's a real note.
With a mimeograph?
No, it's a really well printed note. It's not cheap crap, like the Confederate money wasn't during the that era. It's really a nice little note, except it's got an expiration date printed on it.
I'm sorry, your money is past due. The expiration date. Oh, that's fantastic.
It's like this is expired.
No longer valid after. Oh, that's great. Best before. November 2nd.
Best before. You better spend this money, dude, because it's out tomorrow. So it's like, oh, brother.
That could happen. There's a lot of, I've noticed that our money has changed a lot. Yeah, yesterday, I got some new quarters in change, and now has Alaska on the back. Do you have any of these?
Oh, my daughter's collected all of them except Hawaii. And by the way,
let me just say one thing, because she might be able to help us in this. I had an older quarter, and it really feels like it's a different weight or a different alloy, or it feels different. It doesn't feel as solid as the older quarter. Has something changed?
Oh yeah, they've changed the composition. They on and off for forever. I mean, they used to even be made with some silver content.
It feels cheap. It feels cheap, Jack.
It is cheap.
Yeah, but the older quarters felt kind of good. Now it feels like cheap ass money, like guilt. Guilt.
It's a little cheaper than it was. You get used to it. So as long as it triggers the parking meter, that's all you care about. Every back of everyone, they have every state's got their own, quarter. And this part of an idea, one way of like keeping the money kind of stable is you turn yourself into kind of one of these, San Martin or some of these countries that produce a lot of, commemorative stamps and money, commemorative money that people collect because everyone has the collecting bug. So you save it. So instead of putting the money back in circulation, you kind of, squirrel it away in some sort of a collection that you think is going to become valuable sometime. This is a pretty great idea.
I have heard people buying up gold coins, which have an actual amount of gold in them, and then overpaying and their collectibles or whatever.
That's ridiculous. You did the right thing.
Yeah, the real actual gold.
Yeah. Because it's always going to, you know, there's a piece of gold. I mean, it's real gold, and it's got a value that's a market value, and you just buy it and sell it.
Yeah.
There's coins are a crapshoot.
Yeah. Anyway.
So I think that's about it. I think we're done.
Yeah, I think so. We've covered most of the bases.
Yeah, and I think we ran the show up to almost 2 hours.
No, what are we at? We're at 90 minutes. Hour and a half.
Oh.
It took us longer because we had to reconnect a couple times and do all that shit. So that's where we lost the time, but thank God the audience didn't get sucked into that. All right, my friend. So I see you Monday for dinner. Are you in the office Monday?
It's a holiday.
Oh, that's right. Huh. No, well, the studio's running. I know that. I didn't see a note. Is this an official company holiday? Is it a national holiday?
It's Columbus Day. Holiday. The mail's not delivered, but
a minute. Didn't they cancel Columbus Day a while ago? Did it longer
Berkeley,
become...
I know in Berkeley, it's like Indigenous Peoples Day. Or I think they first wanted to call it Screw Columbus Day.
Yeah, like people were saying Columbus wasn't a hero. Fuck him. He was no good. We shouldn't be celebrating.
Guy, mean person. he was not politically correct.
Oh no.
He's a misogynist. He was a slaver.
So that would be a great day to pull the grid down. Perfect 3-day weekend. I'm just saying.
Timing. Timing.
Timing is everything. All right. Coming to you from the Curry Condo in Gitmo Nation West, I'm Adam Curry.
And I'm in northern Silicon Valley, where it's actually quite nice again this evening. I'm John C. Dvorak.
And we'll be back next week from different sides of this Gitmo Nation on No Agenda.